More information on their offerings is available at braindynamicsantafe.com.
I'd like now to welcome Deborah Madison. She is a chef, author, and food activist, and she will be speaking this evening at 6 o'clock at the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers in a talk titled Edible Food for a Sustainable Lifestyle. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
So this is something that happens. We always feature the speakers at the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers, which, by the way, takes place at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum Annex here in Santa Fe. And you will be talking, really engaging the young people and maybe not so young people about the question of food. And one of the questions you're going to ask them is, or one of the things you're going to talk about is what goes into making a cheeseburger?
Oh, yeah. This is something I'm cribbing completely from this amazing book that I just got from a 12-year-old boy. It's called Stuff, the Secret Life of Everyday Things. And it takes things like a cheeseburger or a can of Coke or the fries that go with it, and it really breaks them down as to what goes into them, whether it's water, whether it's aluminum bauxite for the can of Coke, the beef, how much water it took to raise it, the potatoes, what it takes to freeze potatoes, and on and on and on. It is so complex when you start to actually look at something at that level of detail. So since we seldom do that, that is a little exercise I'd like to do with the kids tomorrow.
So let's just do one of them. What goes into making a cheeseburger? I mean, when okay. you think about the difference between, let's say, fried potatoes that you might get near a potato farm and fried potatoes that you get in the town near the potato farm that come from McDonald's, even though they might taste sort of similar, it's night and day. Cheeseburger, same thing.
Sure, it's going to be the quality of the meat that goes in it, the quality of the cheese, the bun, everything. One of the things that's interesting about the fries is that when you think of industrial fries, in other words, you didn't go to the farmer's market and buy the potato, but you went to McDonald's and got them. They're all come from one kind of potato, the Burbank russet, which is a fine potato, but as you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of varieties of potatoes. So, but this one happens to fulfill the needs of industrial production. So that's all that's growing in Idaho potato fields. It's this one kind of potato. That's a serious monocrop.
Well, that's a setup for the Irish potato famine.
It's a setup for all kinds of things. I mean, it completely denies anything about having biodiversity, for example, and of course, then that becomes the taste that people become used to. That becomes the definition of the potato when, in fact, there's just all kinds of potatoes and tastes and flavors and textures and even colors out there. So it's sort of diminishing, I think, to our food mentality.
Interesting, because, I mean, we were going to talk about climate change and depletion of the soil and all of these real physical things, but that's kind of a cultural thing, which has to do with the kind of homogenization of American and world culture.
I think this is a lot of this is cultural. We have a lot of cultural habits and assumptions that we don't even question. One, for example, is that I think we have an expectation that we can have anything all the time. And we do. You know, health people tell us that we should have blueberries. We should eat blueberries and this and that because they're good for us. So you can go to any store in town and buy blueberries, some chili. You can buy raspberries. You can buy blackberries. You're buying food from thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away. We expect to find it there.
Right.
All
and
the
for,
time.
And for us, whether it came from Española or whether it came from Chile, we go pick it up, put it in our cart, plunk down the money, take it home and eat it.
And the amazing thing is I know this because I had to write it. I was writing an article on some fruit desserts last week. So as often happens, you're testing recipes months before, you know, things are in season. So I had to buy all these peaches and plums and berries and things from South America. And they actually were not that much more expensive than what we pay during the summer at the peak of season.
At the farmer's market?
No, at Whole Foods.
Oh, at Whole Foods.
The farmer's market food will be a little bit more expensive because it takes more into account the actual labor of picking those raspberries, which is very tedious, you know, and people want to pay themselves a decent wage as they should.
So let's get back to the cheeseburger.
Okay.
What goes into, I mean, we're talking about a bun, cheese, and meat.
and lettuce and tomato.
Okay.
Okay, so, well, the beef is a big thing. You know, the beef starts its life where? It could start right here in the West, possibly grazing on public lands, possibly not. More likely it starts in the Midwest. It then travels on a long journey to a feedlot, another journey to a slaughterhouse, a packing house, another journey to a central distribution center. It's actually possible to eat beef that was raised 50 miles from Santa Fe that had to travel 3,000 miles to come back to New Mexico. And then you double that for all the back hauling, for all the empty trucks.
Why did they take them back and forth?
Well, because our method right now is that they go to a feedlot. They go to a processing plant.
Wouldn't it be cheaper to bring the food to them?
Well, wouldn't you think? It would certainly be better in many ways. And, you know, with peak oil, with the luxury of being able to do something as foolish as this, you know, I think we're going to start looking at it differently. We have wonderful local beef that you can buy here in Santa Fe that really is raised 50 miles from here. And that's all it traveled. Maybe it did travel some because we don't have many slaughter facilities in New Mexico. But it certainly didn't travel 3,000 miles.
And so how did they get the cows to a slaughterhouse?
They trail them, truck them.
You mean when we're traveling on the highways, there's thousands of cows going on the road
with
us?
Yeah, you haven't seen them. They're there.
Good heavens. Anyway, okay, so that's...
Anyway, so you have cattle that are moving around. The cattle are fed a huge amount of grain. A lot of that grain is corn.
Which isn't really good for them.
No, nor for us. A lot of that grain is corn, and so that's growing.
Some of that corn is genetically modified.
Probably a good, most of it is genetically modified. Now, a lot of the corn is being used for biofuels. We've made a decision to use corn for fuel instead of for food. So that's going to certainly add to the price of beef because the price of corn is so much higher than it was. The cattle have to be watered. You know, it takes a lot of water. It takes a lot of food to grow a quarter-pound burger. And in the breakdown, in the end, what this book comes up with is, in terms of water alone, for a quarter-pounder, that's not very much, 4 ounces of beef.
No, you don't even get full.
No, you don't. You get, it takes 616 gallons of water for the beef part, 5.6 for the cheese part, 2.5 for the bun, 3.2 for the ketchup. That's a little bit more. Tomatoes are thirstier. The tomato itself, 1.8. And the lettuce, which is actually a watery food, yeah, is mostly water, takes 1.3 gallons. We're just looking at a profile of water there.
Over 600 gallons of water go into making a cheeseburger.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have the wrapper, which is a 3-ply wrapper with plastic and metal and so on and so forth. And the napkins and the bag.
Right.
And it goes on and on and on.
And the garbage.
And the garbage.
That those instantly create. So basically what you are doing with the young people tonight is getting them to start thinking, and me, it's apparently, about, and our listeners, about how much goes into fast food.
Well, that into any food, really, because since it's the issue tonight is about sustainability, you know, we need to be able to look at what the process is in creating a meal to understand how we can even begin to think about it in terms of making it more sustainable. So it includes, of course, not just the food stuff, but if it comes in a can, like a soda, then you have to think about the can. You know, all the parts from around the world that went into making that, all the incredible travel, all the extractive qualities of not only, you know, mining as industry, but agriculture as industry. So, I mean, this is something I would love to do a lot with everybody, look at every meal in that way. But anyway, I thought we would try that as a way of getting started to examining sustainable food and what that might look like.
So you are a cook. How has the awareness of all this stuff affected the way you cook and do cookbooks and think about cooking?
Well, I've always been, ever since I started cooking, really, I think I've just naturally come by a sense of eating what's in the backyard kind of thing because of when I grew up and growing up in California and actually having a backyard one could eat from. I mean, this seems very right to me. I always get the most joy in my cooking and the most inspiration when when it's food I can really identify, it either came out of my garden or a friend brought it over, I got it at the farmer's market, that I have some connection to, something I recognize. You know, like a lot of people, much of the year that's not the case. And it's okay, you know, it's all right. But I never get that fire of inspiration, you know, until I've got it in my hand and I can know where it came from. In fact, one of the things I want to learn from the kids, because I don't really know what their experience is as high school kids, what they eat, what they enjoy about food. Do they eat with their families? Do they eat with their friends? I'm also really wanting to know, have any of them ever sat down to a meal where they were able to identify every part of it? And encourage them, perhaps, to get together when the farmer's market has a little more to offer and go and try to do that.
Very interesting. No. Including, I mean, one thing that often happens for people is you can't, when somebody gives you, for me anyway, a wonderful dish of food, it's hard to even identify what all the herbs and spices are unless you really are knowledgeable.
Well, it helps, yes. It helps to be picking them and smelling them and doing all that, and then you begin to learn. I suspect that very few of the kids cook at all. But there may be some who do. But I'm definitely going to encourage them to learn to cook something and become self-reliant in some respect and independent. A nutritionist just sent me this morning a really interesting little test you can take to evaluate something she's calling your food independence. And so it's a series of questions that you get points for. And are you dependent on others to shop for, prepare for, or deliver your food is one question. Do you prepare most meals from scratch using occasional prepackaged ingredients? Anyway, these all have a value.
Okay, so like when, let's say you go to Trader Joe's and you get a bag of arugula. Is that prepackaged? Is that considered prepackaged when you make your salad?
Well, that's a good question. I think a bag of arugula is just... It's like if you got a head of lettuce, you wouldn't say that. It's just that it's been put in a bag.
Right, but they've chopped it up and washed it, whereas you would do that at home if you just took one off the...
Yes, if I go outside and lift up my cover on my little grow bed and pick my arugula, it's a different experience. But some will be more than others. And the point isn't really to, like, split hairs. Pardon me, although we could. But it's more about a measure of our independence and the degree to which we're able to really feed ourselves.
And that's tricky business here in New Mexico, where we don't have that much water and where it takes, I mean, I remember I've got a cherry tree in my yard, and one year I got the cherries before the birds got them. I ate them off of the tree, made a cherry cobbler, and we ate it in one meal. I thought, wow, one whole entire year's worth of harvest was one meal.
It's pretty sobering, isn't it?
It is indeed.
It's very sobering. And we really have so little concept of that in our food system today because everything comes from everywhere, you know. So it's not, I don't know that we'll find answers, but it's something to explore, exactly what you said, to see, oh my gosh, that's all I got from that tree. But maybe the next year you'll get three times as much. Maybe the year after that you won't get any. You know, it is very hard.
Another thing in your cheeseburger example is how much water it takes for meat as opposed to vegetables.
Yeah, and it takes more grain too, which is food. This is an argument that, the grain argument that people have used for years, like it takes so much grain to feed a cow, how many people would it feed? I always say, well, that never does any good because people don't really like to eat grain. They like to eat grain in the form of something that's been done to it. It's pasta, it's bread, it's actually beef.
Right.
But when it comes to water, that's something else because water is scarce and it's only going to be more so, it looks to be, with global warming. And that in itself might be a good reason, I wouldn't say not to ever have a cheeseburger, but to maybe ascribe a new place in one's life to meat itself and how often one has it and in what form one has it. We might just start to think about this a little bit differently. I think we're going to be forced to think about it differently, but let's get a jump on it.
Deborah Madison is a chef, she's an author, a food activist, and tonight she will be at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum Education Annex at 123 Grant Avenue here in Santa Fe at the Santa Fe Science Cafe for Young Thinkers and the the conversation, I guess you would call it, is titled Edible Food for a Sustainable Lifestyle. Once again, it starts at 6 o'clock. And it's just wonderful to have you here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Nick Appalucci for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Jazz Experience. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao.